again, and welcome back to Flip the Focus. I'm Jen Dobby, and I'm the creative director at Hot Work Australia. Throughout the series of Flip the Focus, I interview tech funders, founders, and fearless leaders who are female, and they're going to show us how to amplify female voices in tech around Australia and the world. And I'm super excited today to have Claire Waring with us on the pod. Hi, Claire. How are you?
Very well, thank you. How are you doing, Jen?
I'm good, and I'm glad to hear that you're well. When I was putting the podcast list together of the dream people I wanted to talk to, I think your combined passions of design and tech really excited me. And the fact that you've gone on to use them to actually set up something practical, I also find very exciting. So I guess what you have set up is Gebba. It's an AI-powered app. Basically, it's a personal assistant. It handles all your emails, messages, events, and tasks if you are a busy family, and I guess helps ease the mental load. So look, it's fair to say that your life experience really has brought together those two passions of design and tech. How did that experience, combined with your experience of motherhood, really lead into the conception of Gebba for you?
I started to look for tools and technology that would help me handle what is effectively kid admin, handling and juggling a family and a really big job. And what I found was there was nothing out there. There were really no tools would help, and which really surprised me, to be honest, because the technology is so capable of helping ease and automate all of this mental load. When I say that, I mean all the kid emails that come in and the WhatsApps and the organizing and the scheduling, all of those things that we all drown in. There was nothing on the market that wasn't more work than it was just to do it myself. There seemed to be no technology. Once I got past the point of sort of being a bit dumbfounded by that, I started doing some research into it. And what I discovered was that mental load is a really irritable issue. And it's an issue that affects primarily women right now. It's not to say that men don't have it at all, but what we found in our research is that 90% of women carry the schedule and the managing and the organizing of their family. So it's predominantly an invisible and a female problem. And what that means is, in a world where most startups and most tech development is very male-led, it just wasn't a problem that founders had focused on in the past. And so I had this sort of perfect storm. I'd created apps and utility, and yet for my personal circumstance of being a mum with two small boys, I found that there was nothing really out there to help me manage that family life, to juggle home and work.
And I think it's huge, because I guess similarly to you, when the first conversations really that I was aware of, you know, was the cartoon depiction of mental load. And what was that, sort of 5 or 6 years ago now? And it was really one of those things, those real tipping point moments where you realize this is a thing that you've just taken on and you've been doing it, but you've never really put a finger on what it is. And it was so well explained. And what I find fascinating now is so many conversations that I have with other people who are in similar positions, you know, working and at the same time raising a family, still aren't aware of the mental load as an issue at all.
We do it on autopilot. And so that comic was a feminist comic that came out of France in 2017, which really for the first time articulated what mental load was. And so when we think about mental load in a domestic sense or in a home, mental load is all of the thinking and the remembering and in particular the anticipating of needs of your entire family. And women have taken that on for many, many years. We live in a society where we have a construct that's left over from having one person at home looking after family and kids and one person going out and being the breadwinner. And the thing with mental load is that mental load falling on women is left over from that construct where the woman would stay at home and do the work and the man would go out and be the breadwinner. Now, we've all moved on. What we're finding is that women are going back to full-time and part-time work droves. The increase is fantastic, which is great for the empowerment of women, for the closing of the gender gap. But society hasn't caught up as yet. Institutions and workplaces haven't caught up with that. And so the societal expectations and the workplace expectations are still based around the idea that you have one person at home who is managing all of those things. So not just the caring, the physical hands-on caring of a family, but the thinking and the anticipating and the scheduling and all of that thinking work. And that's the part that is known as the mental load. It's the constant management of family. And so we're really stuck in this halfway place right now where we've moved on with women starting to be more and more present and moving up and up in the workforce, which is great, but we haven't caught up with tools or rearranging expectations so that the mental load of a family is evenly distributed between men and women, or in my belief, can be lifted and eased by technology helping do some of the work for us. So we're sort of in this very uncomfortable halfway place right now.
There's a couple of things that I'm really excited to unpack out of that. I think firstly, it's that conversation around the societal structure of it. You mentioned before that you've had experience living in a number of different countries and cultures. How do you find Australia placed in terms of our relationship to females and females at work and that workload at home? Do you find that we're kind of at the same level as the other places you've lived, or advanced from that, or behind from that?
I think the difference that you find somewhere like Asia is that there is domestic help that's available and accessible for women at a level that we just don't get in Australia, because wages are higher in Australia. Not many women can afford to have somebody be a live-in helper. So what I've experienced is having full-time domestic help, which is an incredible gift and really takes care of the woman's own side of things, but it still leaves you, you still need to do the mental side of things. And I think in those cultures, it still falls very much to women. But if we take Copenhagen, in particular the Scandinavian countries, they are just far and away ahead of Australia when it comes to both participation in the workforce and also the equal division of both caring for children and also of that domestic mental load. And part of the reason that this fascinated me when I lived in Copenhagen, just the differences, part of it is that men and women are very hands-on with a baby from the time of maternity leave. So there's equal maternity and paternity leave. It is very accepted and common. So there's 12 months. Actually, I speak for Copenhagen, but the other Scandinavian countries outside Denmark are all very much on par. There's 12 months maternity or paternity leave, and the partners can decide how they split that. So it's very common for a mum to take 6 months and a father to also take 6 months together. And so what that does is it means from the out they are both equally capable of looking after a baby and of anticipating and taking care of a baby's needs. The difference in Australia is that because usually it's females, there's usually only a few weeks paternity leave even available, because it's typically the mum who takes that time off. From the outset, we are the gatekeepers and the knowledge holders of what our babies need and of what needs to be done when it comes to caring for our children. And so we start off with this sort of vault of knowledge as we go through, and that continues from maternity into the children going to daycare or school or onto all sorts of other things. It means that mum becomes the default parent and the holder of all knowledge, and dad typically, and I am generalizing here, this is certainly not the case in all families, but dad typically sort of goes to mum to ask the question of what do we do next, what needs to be done. They're very happy to help out, but they take that supporting role as opposed to that thinking and anticipating role.
And I think that's so interesting. You know, there are so many things from a societal level that are structures in place which are beneficial to both genders and whatever kind of partnership you're in. Really, within the Scandinavian countries, it's about accepting that the raising of children is a complicated and labor-intensive process, and so everybody needs to be involved in that. I guess in the really common storytelling, it's, you know, it takes a village, right? And these days it kind of takes a village, not so much to raise the child, but to support the parents raising the child.
I mean, the other thing that you find in Scandinavia is it is widely accepted that dads are going to leave at a certain time to go and pick children up from daycare. It is widely accepted that it may be the mum or the father that has to take the day off work because a child is at home sick. There is very much equality in the expectation of carer responsibility between males and females, because what happens when you have universal childcare. So that's the other difference in Scandinavia, is there is free childcare from age 12 months for all children in Denmark in particular. And what that means is mums do tend to go back to full-time work at a higher rate than they do in Australia. That leads to the workplace expectation that females work full-time as much as males do, and therefore there is an equal expectation among caregiving responsibility between females and males in Scandinavian culture. And that means that men don't have a stigma to caregiving responsibilities. And what we find in places like Australia and also in the UK, in most Western culture, for most men, there really is still a stigma attached to asking for or putting their hands up because they want to take time for caregiving responsibility. There's a crazy stat, like men are in the UK 2 times as likely to be turned down when they ask for flexible working arrangements as women are. So while we have a motherhood penalty in terms of financial outcomes in Australia, we also have what's being widely circulated as the fatherhood forfeit, where men feel like they can't be as active a part of their children's lives as they want to be because there's a stigma associated with them taking the time to do that.
Yeah, and it's such an issue, isn't it? Because I think even if, the male partner at home is really committed to giving genuine support and very much being an equal part, and, going back to our mental load conversation, taking on physical responsibility and the mental load, there's such a stigma associated around it, both in the UK and here. I wonder, was there a particular moment for you, if we think about the experiences that you've had in different cultures and you've come back to Australia, was there a particular moment for you that really kind of clarified all of this and brought it together and you thought, now's the time? Like, you've talked a little already about having the idea and knowing that tech could do it, but was there a particular moment for you?
It was back in the, I think it would have been about 2021, and I'd been doing, really this idea came about in the midst of all of that. In COVID, I was preparing to go back to work, and I started reading a book by Annabelle Crabb, which is called The Wife Drowned.
She famously says,
women need wives and men need lives. And I think that statement for me really said it all. The thing that I really came together was women want a way out of mental load, but equally men want to help. They just don't know how. And women aren't very good at, and I count myself in this, I've never been really good at handing over responsibilities to my husband and just trusting that he'll do a great job. And so for me, the theory was, or really the light bulb moment was, it doesn't have to be mental load on either male or female. Most of the literature that I read was talking about dividing everything evenly between male and female. But for me, that helps with the load, but it doesn't lift it from everybody. I really felt like technology could actually help lift that load and also provide a platform for collaboration so that women could get this stuff out of their head and into a place where men could access it, and women could feel confident that their partners had everything they needed in order to complete a job. So, for example, my husband wouldn't have to call me to say, what court are they on for basketball, because I can't find the rest of the team, because it would be in one place that he could look up straight away. And it struck me that that central repository for information and knowing that everything was somewhere where everybody could access it was as important a step in unloading that mental burden as anything else. And so, to answer your question, it was 2021, and it was a combination of both outrage that there was nothing that existed, realizing that, quite frankly, because most startups are male founded and this wasn't a visible problem, I mean, it hadn't been for females either, but it was only a newly visible problem, that there was an opportunity, I think, for women to get involved and to create something with technology from a lived experience of the mental load, but also from a place of seeing that there is a better way, technology can provide a better way, and quite frankly, why hasn't this been done before?
I love that. And there's a few themes, I think, to unpack out of that. One of the things I really love about that particular origin story, and which I think Gether is so particularly good at, is, it's that ongoing conversation in a relationship, isn't it? It sometimes ends up with this mental load, feeling like it's you know, you versus your partner. And really it should be both of you versus all of this mental admin that you've got to do. And what I love about Gether is it really takes technology and puts it in the position of, you know, it's kind of the third space or the process, which removes the emotion from the situation and the frustration from the situation and just says, look, we can have this third party, which is going to be the repository for all the information. Neither of us need to be the boss of that. So I think something my girlfriends and I talk about a lot is, you know, like if parenting is, you know, game playing, like, did you sign up for this level of, you know, I'm rubbish at admin, life admin. Did not sign up for this level of like paperwork and signing things off, and exactly like you get them to the game on the right day at the right time, but then you don't know which core or like which pair of socks or, and I don't want to be the boss of that. So I love this. I love the way that your, I guess your lifetime of really knowing that tech is this perfect intersection of humanity and digital capability has really forged this very useful tool. And I think the other theme that comes out of there for me is that sense of community as well. And it's something you talk to really strongly in the different cultures that you've lived in, the different workplaces that you've been, and also the community that is required to raise children, you know, and being part of that sense together. I think another place I'd love to go with this conversation about community is, it's really interesting. I want to talk a little bit about your experience with Blackbird and where you've gone through that funding. Where I'd love to center that conversation is your experience there and how you went through it. And then really this interesting decision you made coming out of that to build community first. Because I think so often on the funding journey, when we're looking at founders, it's let's go after the money. And you've made a very deliberate and concerted decision. Build community, then look for the funds. Can you talk to me a little bit about that and around your Blackbird experience?
Yeah, sure. Look, our Blackbird experience was absolutely brilliant, I have to say. So much support from so many mentors who give their time and advice free around your startup. Yeah, I can't say enough great things about the Blackbird experience. I also loved that they had a pretty equal ratio of mentors that were male and female. And so while I know in the startup world that we have, you know, a definite skew towards male, I think there was a really concerted effort to both have, I can't remember the percentage, but a relatively even percentage of female and male in the program, but also a real emphasis on having female mentors as well as brilliant male mentors in order to take us through. And I applaud them for that because that made a real difference for us. I mean, I've been in digital my whole career, so I'm very used to being the only female in the room and the only female for days. So to be honest, my co-founder and my sister as well has come from that world. And so for the two of us, that would have been fine. But I can see how for many founders that would have been really intimidating. So that first off was a really...
Was that, just doubling back on that a little bit, was that your expectation going in, look, I'm going to apply for this and it's going to be a room full of like guys leading it and male founders, and you were surprised that it wasn't the case, having had that experience before?
Always better and better and better over the years. But from my experience, it's never my expectation that there's going to be a stack of women in the room. Often when there are a lot of women in the room, which is
that's a good surprise in this case, right?
And I think that is fantastic is you've got women like Kirsten Hunter and others who are really just this beautiful drive force helping women through that space. And that's what I felt when I was in the program. Everybody from Meg, who runs the program, to Kirsten, to other incredible female mentors and male mentors that we had, cheered us on from the sidelines. It was brilliant. So that was a really great experience. And I think the thing for us that program was we took leaps and bounds really quickly, much faster than we thought we were going to. So within 2 weeks of being in the program, we had some great advice from a couple of different mentors, actually, that we should get a pilot program going ASAP. And I can remember this moment where we were 7 days out from the start of the school term, term four last year, and my sister and I are having this conversation of, oh my God, if we're going to do this, it has to be for term four, because then it's going to be the end of the year and nobody's going to be available or able to take any of this on. We know that mums get busier and busier as the year goes on. And if we don't run it for term four, then we're going to have to wait until January, February next year before we can run a pilot program. So we took this really deep breath and went, okay, we can do this. We can create a black box pilot program for 20 women and men. Actually, it wasn't just women. We had 3 primary care dads who were on it as well. We can put this together and we can put it out there and we can just see how it goes. And the Blackbird program gave us both the practical advice on how to do that and how to do it well and some of the data points and the inputs that we needed to look for, but also the support along the way for us to adjust and make sense of what we had. And at the end of that program, figure out what's next. And for us, the beauty was that pilot program exceeded all of our expectations. Needed this was going to be, it just blew us out of the water that not only were those participants engaged and actively using the platform, but the results at the end of us showed us that 90% of all of those participants had felt that they not only were more informed, and so more informed and more empowered and more on top of all of those schedules and that mental load, but that they felt less anxious and overwhelmed about parenting as a result. In regards to Blackbird, we wouldn't have gotten there that quickly with the program. We wouldn't have been able to set it up as well and as efficiently, but also gotten as much out of it in terms of data and learnings if we hadn't had that program and those mentors.
I think that's amazing. Let's come back to the community question in a minute, because there's something else that I think would be really interesting. We're talking to people now who really might be at that slightly earlier stage on their journey. So they've had a great idea and they want to look at an accelerator program. Or what was the process for you? How did you find out about it? Having lived in that ecosystem for a while, did you always know it was an opportunity? Like, talk us through the process of how you got involved in the program.
Yeah, look, we're very aware of Blackbird, as everybody is, very famous BC in Australia. We were actually having a session with a mentor in another program that was set up specifically for women, and that program had been great. It was coming to an end. It had just been a few kind of connect with a mentor sessions, nothing as structured as Blackbird. And one of the mentors in that session actually pulled me aside and said, have you applied? Are you in the Blackbird program that's starting soon? And we hadn't at that stage applied. And so I responded, no. She said, you need to be in that program. I think this has got real legs. You have a real opportunity here. I'd recommend that you apply. And so off the back of her recommendation, we did that. And it was really soon after that we were accepted and then into the program. In fact, I think we might have even been quite late in the day in applying for it. So we were actually sort of encouraged again and shunted on by somebody who said, you have an opportunity here, go.
Yeah, I love that. And I think a couple of, you know, takeouts for that for me would be, you know, on the one hand, it's around networking, get the idea out there, talk to people, socialize it, see, you know, what's working, what isn't working. You said you're already, you know, in a program. And then really, you know, if somebody says to you, this is an amazing idea, take it forward, you know, jump on that. Like, there's no time like the present when it comes to really embracing those opportunities.
Absolutely. And look, I think with Blackbird, and there are other programs out there as well, the beauty of it is it helps you validate your idea as well. So you don't have to be fully formed. It doesn't have to be all singing and all dancing at that stage. You can join at any time. And I think the earlier you start talking to people about the idea that you have and the earlier you start diving into both validating but also starting to prototype around that idea, the quicker you find out whether that is something that you want to continue with or if along the way you need to pivot and come up with another idea. There's no point in sitting on something till there's the right time, because A, there's never the right time, but never ever. B, the earlier you get it out there, the quicker you get to validating or not. And if it's not the right idea, then fine. There are lots of other ideas and there are lots of pivots that you can have, but the sort of holding on to it for too long before you start actioning it, I think, is to the detriment of most founders.
And such a key learning, I think, to have early on, particularly in the startup journey, really, of, you know, having this great idea, putting it out there. It's basically test and learn and iterate, right? You know, you're going to need to know that and operate on that basis. You know, and you spoke to it as well, you know, once you're in the accelerator program, you and your sister realized, oh, we're going to have to do this like overnight. If we're going to hit term 4, we've got to go and we've got to go.
Exactly. So what we had was a group of people who could really help us and teach us how to do that. We wouldn't have known how to run a program that quickly. We could have figured it out, but we had people that we could ask who had years and years and years of advice on how we could put this together effectively, cost effectively, but also quickly, and how it could operate in the structure of a black box, so that we knew exactly whether it was going to be something that was valuable to our audience or not.
And it's those learnings, isn't it? You know, like how to package it up and how to move at pace and where to be taking things. Yeah. I think what was so interesting about that, again, is that sense of community. You built it within Blackbird. And then take me back a little bit to, so you said the results showed people were, you know, felt less overwhelmed by their mental load and by the admin, but also felt kind of more positive. Was that the moment where you then thought, okay, based on these results, this is going to be more about continuing to build that sense of momentum within that community and less about going straight for funding?
Absolutely. Look, I think for us, we always wanted to make sure both that we had real traction with this before we went for funding. Funding is like rocket fuel on any idea. And we didn't feel like as yet we were in a position to pour rocket fuel on Gather at that point. We really wanted to spend time continuing to learn from our customers, continuing to tweak and change and get this into a position where it was genuinely useful. I think that was really important to us to demonstrate traction, both for ourselves and the pace that we wanted to go at, but also because I think, honestly, our chances of retaining more equity in the business, of us attracting more investors, are better if we can demonstrate real value, genuine use, and community around it. And also, I come from both a technology and a brand background. I feel like I want to build this brand, I want to build this community first out into the world, or I then am at a point where we say, let's go, it's time for funding, it's time to really, really accelerate this.
Oh, look, I'm not going to argue with you there. I'm getting those brand basics right. You know, nailing your tone of voice, nailing the look and feel, nailing the offer, putting them all together and making that recognizable, you know, that can push up people's intent to react with your brand by up to 20%.
Absolutely. And I think the difficult thing for us with funding is that most VCs are heavily male-led. And because this isn't a problem that most of them have experienced personally, it's a difficult thing to communicate. I know Noga talked about this actually a little bit in your other podcast. I'm very aware, even from the conversations that I've had with friends and people in the program, that people who, there's one of two reactions. We have people who are parents and who are living this kid admin nightmare, which it basically is the deluge of emails and WhatsApps and everything coming at you a million miles an hour. And they immediately connect with the idea. They immediately, you can see their eyes light up and you can see that they share in that experience of this is a nightmare, there's got to be a better way. But there are people who, and this is bad, people who haven't had that experience, whose eyes sort of glaze over slightly when we start talking about this. And you can see them looking for the nearest exit as I tell them about my startup. And it's just, it's if it's not part of your lived experience, it's harder to connect with an idea. So for us, the reality is it's not going to be everybody's lived experience, and that's okay. But if we can demonstrate the impact that we're having with an existing community and audience where it is their lived experience, then we're in a much stronger position for funding.
I think that the vast majority of the people needing this type of tool at this point in time are still female. Females now more than 50% of the population. This isn't like a minority, cute little niche idea anymore. You know, this is really using tech to address and alleviate a really significant burden. You know, and it's called the mental load for a reason. It really is a significant burden on people's quality of life and on their mental health.
It absolutely is. And it means that there's not, in my opinion, there's not ever going to be equality in a workplace until we solve mental load, because the moment a mum walks in the room, she does not have the same level of clear headspace as a male colleague may have. She still has this stuff, and women are very good at parking that and doing their jobs and getting things done, but they're at a distinct disadvantage in their careers when they are juggling two things at once, a day job and what is effectively a second night and weekend job of managing kids. And so if we want to get to a point of equality, then we need to get to a point where that load is evenly shared.
I think it's fantastic to really use tech to solve that issue as well. It's, you know, in a time where we're really having these conversations around the different implications of the advance of tech, this is a really positive and immediate way to use tech in a very real problem, which you can alleviate quite significantly. It's really exciting.
Absolutely. I mean, as I said earlier, it just seems crazy to me that there hasn't been any work done in this problem space previous. You think about even the simplest of AI and automation and tools are able to make a real difference in this space. It's not rocket science. It's effectively admin. And if we think about workplaces, we give people in workplaces key tools to succeed, right?
Really?
We have all of these different tools for people to do their best work at work, but we don't have any tools to help people do their best at home, to alleviate all of those tasks that are just fluff and distractions. And so the theory is that if we assume that mum is the CEO of home, we need to give her the digital tools in order to succeed in that place. I'm effectively solving my own problem.
Someone's got two, Claire.
I've spent a lifetime dropping the ball when it comes to juggling work and kids, and that's a really hard thing. And I've seen in my teams as well, I've seen new mums and female colleagues both struggle with juggling both of those things, but also hold themselves back in their careers because they feel like they can't manage it all. And I can see why. It is a lot. It is so much to manage. We need to support that with tools that can aggregate and schedule and sort and help take care of some of that.
I think it's so true. From, you know, my experience is also that, you know, that mental load. The bottom line is you only have so much time and so much energy in any given day. And if you can remove that admin, it absolutely makes you a better parent. You can be more focused and more present. And you feel much more competent as well. Look, I love the possibilities with this tool as well. When you can look at companies as well, you know, having this as part of a package to offer to employees, I think GEVA would make a real difference in terms of the experience of working for companies too.
Absolutely. It's in a company's best interest to provide people with the tools for mental wellness, but also being both happier at home and more productive at work.
I think that's great because it also talks to one of the topics we brought up at the beginning, which is, you know, we need this societal shift for both men and women in the way that they can approach work, asking for time off or working differently or working more flexibly. And I think that in the meantime, as we wait for legislation to catch up with the realities of life, you know, it's fantastic that tech like this can really offer that buffer so that whilst, you know, the reality of our lives is that all of this is going on and we need to juggle it on a day-to-day basis, we can use tech to solve that. So I think that's amazing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And look, you know, who doesn't want to spend less time on admin, like calendar entries for basketball games, and
right,
less time either with your kids or at work or out doing something for yourself?
Exactly right. Listen, I need to get towards the end of wrapping this up, and it's difficult for me because, as you know, I happily talk about Gemma all this. But what we want to do is come out of each of our conversations with really giving people some inspiration and action that they can take having listened to this episode. So what advice would you give to someone who's looking to start up now? So the position you were in when you had your idea for Gemma in the current climate, what would be kind of a couple of tips or things that you think, you know, you wish someone had told you then?
It takes time to really build a startup from scratch. So you want to dive in as fast as you can, but it will also take a little longer than you think.
I love that. And I love the through line with that parenting analogy too, like how the days last forever, but the years flash by. I really like that.
It's exactly like that. So, yeah.
I love that. What do you think would be, you know, a specific thing, if all of us who are listening to this conversation went away and did one thing that could help amplify female founders or tech voices in Australia, what would it be? What would your advice be? A thing that we can all do today to help this?
Put it on LinkedIn is word of mouth. And so I think if we all went out there and recommended or posted about just one female founder or startup, it would make a difference, because that ability of what is a small group right now is really important in order to continue the momentum. And we do have some momentum right now. We do have some momentum. It's not there yet, but cheerleading and hyping, and Jen, you do such an incredible job at this, so thank you. But I think that genuinely helps. It genuinely makes a difference, because if there's anything I know from advertising dollars, it's awareness. Having these things top of mind is half the battle.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And you know, one of our favorite stats, those of us in advertising, you know, like, it's that word of mouth piece. You have a great experience, you're going to tell 9 other people about it. If you're posting about it on your LinkedIn, on your Insta, wherever you're finding it, it's legitimizing that conversation, and it's legitimizing and supporting that business. I love that. And I think that's a great place for us to end that conversation, which is, you know, the action that we can take to sort of female tech can be as simple as seeing something that you like that's in a conversation and really sharing that and adding your voice to that so other people hear about it as well. Amazing. Claire, thank you so much for spending time talking to me today. I've enjoyed it so much, and thank you for future me, who's going to continue to mildly stalk you and cheer you on from the sidelines and be part of Gather as much as I can be. I'm so delighted you've been on Flip the Focus, and I would love to have a deal with you that when you are the next Canva, you won't forget us and you will come back and talk to us then.
I will 100% come back and talk to you then. Absolutely. It's been such a pleasure, Jen. I feel like we could talk all afternoon, but thank you. It's been great.
Thank you.